Blog Talk Radio.
From the hopefully drying plains of Texas to the heating up hills of southern New Mexico, and broadcasting from a beautiful, almost new, remodeled and remortgaged single-wide trailer, Kelly O'Connell, 606. And today is the 28th of May. We are moving into some warm weather. There's no doubt about it. And it's getting to the point, it's going to be very soon to the point where you're not as comfortable outside as you were. Enjoy it while it lasts. 61 degrees right now. Today's high 93, to prove my point. Isn't that the highest it's been so far? It seems to me. 59 is the low. Going to a wedding tomorrow, my niece in Portland, Oregon. So Keith Welpley is going to come in tomorrow, and so you can call him up and keep him company or give him a hard time or both. All right, so have these kind of after effects of this weather in Texas that's still going on, there's still weather over in Texas that is concerning. There's still chances of rain. Last night they were saying up all the way from the from Mexico up through the Panhandle, there's going to be intense weather. And so I've got a few clips on that for you, just to let you know. Here is from the Weather Channel. Check it out. And this is talking about what's happening in Dallas and Oklahoma City and Wichita. There is flash flood warnings right now. Let me get through some of the weather and we'll go into that. All right, so we've got looks like anywhere from 1 to 5 inches of rain that can fall anywhere in Texas that you care to think about. Here, the main thing is that they believe that the rain, these terrible thunderstorms are broken, although there are some tornadoes that are showing up. And here's another clip. All right, so you've got about 75% of the state of Texas and also attached to Oklahoma. This Torcon, this predictor for tornadoes, is saying there's 30% chance, which is much higher than I'm sure the average person would care to have. Now, I've got a little bit more news for you here on these storms. Their death toll is up to something like 19 dead, 12 missing after the Texas floods. And we do have, it's kind of touching here, we've got the fact that New Mexicans are over in there. They are giving volunteer time to help out in the Texas floods. And I'm telling you, it has been absolutely amazing to see this, the way this flooding has played out over Texas. It's been across the whole state, and not just across the whole state from left to right, but from top to bottom. I've never really seen anything like it where it's not connected to a hurricane. It is connected to just a bunch of storms that are coming in one after the other. But I want to give you just a little bit more information on this. And by the way, I do have Bob Jeska in the studio, and he's come in to talk about the Gospel Rescue Mission, talking about helping people, New Mexicans helping people. But here's a few more clips on these storms and the aftermath. And here is about New Mexican volunteers helping out flood-ravaged Texas.
I just kind of rebooted. Sure, man. It's more important than the rescue mission.
Sure. I mean, I'm of the opinion that unless you remind people of stuff, they forget about it. You know, we find that. Yeah. All right, so here's a little bit more on the number of people that have been lost and the confirmed dead or lost. 19 dead, 12 missing. Here's CNN.
What part of the text?
This just amazes me from Houston all the way up.
Yeah. Well, I mean, is their flood over? Is their drought over? I mean, they've got intense flooding. Does that mean the drought's over? Well, folks, there is just some extraordinary. There's a little interruption in this clip here, but. 19 dead, 12 missing from the severe flash floods. And I've got one more clip here from CBS News on this just to kind of fill in the blank here. And this is from yesterday.
But doesn't all that water soak into the ground and some of the pictures, I mean, they had a show to basketball for, with the water all the way up to the rim, you know.
All right, so there's a little bit more on that clip, but you get the idea. There is still a lot of water on the ground in Texas from Houston all the way up past Dallas into Oklahoma. There are tornadoes that are have touched down, and one came down in, I'm trying to remember the name, it's kind of an interesting name in Texas, some little town. But there is tornado activity up in Oklahoma. There's a severe weather all the way up into Ohio, and so they even had a flood warning up in D.C. So we'll keep you posted on that. Anyway, we've got Bob Jeske here to talk about the Gospel Rescue Mission. It is 6:18, AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE. I'm Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450 to call in. We will be back.
Talk about what you want to talk about.
Bob, let's just...
I mean, it doesn't have to be set up in a special way. Warriors versus the Cavaliers. I wonder who's going to win. Well, it seems to suggest that LeBron James is the most influential basketball player in terms of his talent. Although Curry's pretty good. Are you gonna wear these, Bob? Well, you got them on your neck. Just that's how you hear when we're on the top. When you move them, don't be very, very careful because that's how they get broken. So just move it in the direct. No. Well, it doesn't matter on that, but just move it like here.
You want to talk directly into that. Kelly here, and it is 6/22/22. And I've got Bob Jeske here from the Gospel Rescue Mission. And good morning, Bob. Thanks for coming in so early.
Good morning, Kelly. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So just for those people that don't know, although they pass by the area on Amador all the time, and they see people walking across the street at the 30 mile per hour zone, and they see people on the right, they see people on the left, but they don't maybe understand what is the Gospel Rescue Mission.
Well, the Gospel Rescue Mission today is a lot of different things, and if you drive by at 30 miles an hour, you might just look to your north and see an old building, but in fact we're today we are a church that last year had 477 chapel services attended by almost 20,000 people. We're a restaurant that serves three meals a day every day. We're a hotel of 142 beds that never closes. We're a retail store and a food bank. We support probably half a dozen small churches in the area with food, including the Salvation Army and East Mesa Baptist Church, a couple of Methodist churches.
This is a pretty big undertaking.
It is quite a given the size of our staff, it's rather astonishing what can be done with an idea. We rely heavily on volunteers because we only have about 14 full and part-time employees. But this year to date, through the end of May, we've had about 15,000 hours of volunteer time devoted to the mission. So in a very real sense, the mission is the community's shelter.
Okay, so what is the mission of the mission, if you had to sum it up?
The mission of the mission is to provide people who are addicted, who are just homeless, who are abused, an opportunity to not have to worry about food and shelter and clothing, but just to evaluate their lives and hopefully come to the conclusion that the decisions that they have been making on a cumulative level have led them to a dead end. And when they come to that conclusion, we offer them an alternative, a worldview, which is Christianity.
All right, so this is a Christian undertaking. Are you a pastor?
No, I'm not. I sound like one, but I'm an engineer by degree.
Where were you educated?
Undergraduate from the United States Military Academy.
And how did you transition from that into the missionary and this kind of charitable undertaking?
Oh, yikes. That was like a 42-year process. I was a senior leader in the Army, had a full career as a senior executive in industry, joined the board of directors at the mission right after my dad died in 2008. And in January 2012, I became the executive director there. But what really prepared me was the fact that through those 40-some years, I was a adult Bible study teacher and Sunday school teacher, which gave me the background that I needed to appreciate what the mission does, not only for people, but for the community at large.
Wow. So, I mean, it really is down at the foundation of the community, helping the people that are the least able to help themselves.
Right. A smart person once identified the three components of human beings. We operate on three levels, the physical, the spiritual, and the moral, which distinguishes us from other beings on the planet. And at the mission, we address all three of those dimensions, which if you're going to solve a problem that comprises those three dimensions, you've got to address yourself to those three components.
All right. A lot of people would say they're not comfortable with mixing in Christianity or religion with, say, charity or, you know, the same kind of argument against putting it in the government. What is your conviction or what, you know, you're a Christian. What is your feeling about the Christian or the spiritual aspect of what you guys are doing? Because, you know, a lot of people, especially people maybe on the left, would say, just feed them and don't preach to them. Just, you know, help them. Don't try to, you know, dictate to them or tell them what to believe. Or, you know, these kind of sentiments are becoming more and more frequent in society. What would you say to somebody like that?
I would say that those are emotional sentiments that aren't based in any sort of fact. The reality is that our country became exceptional primarily because we had a fundamental belief in God, and we made that clear in our founding documents. So it's not at all unusual that an organization like ours would follow that same path. All the Ivy League colleges, for example, were Christian colleges.
They were started as
sure.
They were all started to train ministers.
The YMCA, the YWCA, the ACLU. These were all
of this started as charitable activity associated with Christianity. Do you have any kind of a feeling that there is a connection between getting back on your feet and having some faith or some spiritual? Because you said you kind of address all three things.
Yeah, absolutely. The physical is, of course, the food, the clothing, the shelter. These are the things that people commonly associate with programs that help people. But there's a spiritual level as well. We require people to work. Anybody that stays at the mission more than a few days, they're required to have a job. Job creates self-esteem. That's the spiritual level, self-worth. We require people to do, we've got a couple of laundry people, security people, administration, maintenance, cooks. There's about 20 folks that are at the mission. They're full-time volunteers. They have a job that's important for the functioning of the mission. And then the moral dimension is, of course, requiring those same people who have an extended stay at the mission to go to church at least 3 nights a week and go to Bible studies in the mornings.
Okay, so we're talking to Bob Jeska from the Gospel Rescue Mission. I've got a link to that on the Blog Talk Radio website. And also, what's the number down there?
It's 523-7727.
And you guys have a website, a pretty nice website.
LCGRM.org. Las Cruces Gospel Rescue Mission.org.
We're going to come back and talk to Bob a little bit more. I'm going to ask him about the nuts and bolts of running this thing, what the programs are, and what are some of the things that you have to overcome to put something like this together, and also maybe what if anybody was interested in helping, how they can do that. We'll be right back. And 6:30 on the button. AM Las Cruces 1450 KOBE. I'm Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450 to call in. We'll be right back.
That's a good.
All right, I want to get in and talk a nuts and bolts Gospel Rescue Mission with Bob. But I just got to ask you one thing, Bob. We were talking off the air. There is this controversy that's in AA. Over whether God should be part of it. And there's this growing movement, I think, as the society becomes more secular and the atheistic and agnostic elements become more empowered, that we need to remove God from the AA, the 12 steps. And I would assume people want that removed from the Gospel Rescue Mission. But in your opinion, your experience, is the religious element necessary and crucial to what you guys are doing? Could you remove it and be successful?
Now, Kelly, the answer is no. Because we are complicated animals and operate on 3 dimensions, the moral underpinning that people should have guiding their lives, if it's not filled with Christ, it becomes filled with other things, which are mostly self-serving. So much of the entertainment nowadays, our phone becomes an entertainment device. It feeds the interest that people have of entertaining themselves. And I know what I'm about to say is going to sound uncharitable, but some of the most selfish and self-centered people that I run across in my daily life are homeless people. And it's primarily because of the life they have to lead, which is
survival.
Taking care of themselves.
Survival.
The heck with everybody else.
Survival.
Me first.
Survival.
Exactly. And the gratification that I feel, and many of the people that work at the mission whose work there is more of a ministry than a job, is to see the transformation of people as they go from a selfish, self-centered, self-absorbed person to one who is focused on more on what they can do for others and without expecting some reward. It's selfless service that I think it was selfless service that was the basis for the success of this country, and it's the basis for the success of the mission as well.
All right. Be that as it may, you're making an argument that people are not just have not arrived where they have in life just as a result of their circumstances, that there are moral decisions that are made and values that affect their outcome.
No, there was a Greek philosopher that predated Socrates. His name was Heraclitus, I believe.
Heraclitus, yeah.
Yeah, and he said the character is destiny.
Character is destiny. He also said all is flux. He also said that war is the father of all. To some, it makes them slaves to other kings.
You are quite well read.
Well, I know a few things from Heraclitus.
But his character that, if you look at people in our history, they were people of character. Unfortunately, where I think we're coming on track as a country from a moral perspective is that we are rewarding people who are of low character with our esteem. We are defying people because of how much money they make or whether they can hit a baseball or throw a football.
What I find interesting about what you're saying, it's almost like a laboratory to see how decisions pan out in people's lives.
It may be a laboratory in one sense, but if you read the Bible, you know that the outcome is not the result of a hypothesis. We minister to exactly the same people that Jesus ministered to.
Mm-hmm. The prostitutes, the drunkards.
The alcoholics, yeah. The addicts, the abused, the abusers.
Yeah.
I don't know that we have any tax collectors in the facility. We could. I don't know.
You might want to do an altar call for tax collectors.
Yeah, maybe. So it's the same group of people, the same type of people.
Feel like you guys are doing a real Christian mission down there, like from Jesus's perspective.
I know so. There's seldom a time that goes by that if you're not paying attention, or if you are paying attention, you would witness a miracle. We have people that come through the facility that are addicted to heroin that get their lives back together and leave the mission. Moving into their own home, jobs, and a family that's back intact.
Wow. That's got to make somebody like you feel like it's all worthwhile.
That's why I do it.
We're talking to Bob Jeska. He is the head of the Gospel Rescue Mission. We're going to take a little break here, and we will get down to the nuts and bolts of running this place and maybe what people can do, what would be meaningful. Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE. The number to call in, 523-1450. We'll be right back.
Yeah, I try to avoid hitting the faith too hard because...
Hey, it's Kelly.
Hey, Kelly, it's Karen. Good morning.
Hey, what's up?
Hey, I only have access to the phone for a minute. I can't wait. Can you please ask Bob to address what we could do for? I'm part of a youth group. What a youth group could do, say on a monthly basis. You know, what different activities could a group of say 20, 30 kids do there as part of their summertime work?
We'll address that on the air.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Bye. Folks, Kelly here, 6:43 AM Las Cruces, 1450. I've got Bob Jeske here, and we are talking about the Gospel Rescue Mission that he is he's running. And by the way, it's 61 degrees outside, the high 93, low 59. And Bob, what somebody called up and said they're involved with a group of people, and we've got another call here, but they're involved with a group of people. What could a youth group do to help out once a week? But hold on, let's take this call real quick. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Hey, Kelly, sorry for interrupting.
I'm listening.
Well, I just wanted to say that I think that feeding the soul like they do is really good. I mean, you could feed people food and it lasts for a day, but you start helping them with their spiritual life where they do some soul searching that can really turn them around.
That's exactly correct. We feel, not to put too terse a point on it, we fill a hole in the soul as we fill a hole in the tummy.
It's like, I think like Christ said in the Bible, he said, feed my sheep. That's what he meant.
Exactly.
Well, there's a lot of sheep in this society, so they do need some food.
I was just wondering, Kelly, like, does your guest, does he find like a lot of people are really soul searching? Are they out there wanting something? Are they looking for more?
They are. We have people that come to the mission that'll stay for a month or 2 months. They are, as you said, in search of something. They know that their life is a dead end, but they can't get off of meth, or they can't get off of their drug of choice. Beverage of choice, and they'll lap and get in trouble with the law, and then they'll come back. We've had people come back 3, 4, 5 times in the course of a 3 or 4 year period, and so that's a great observation. It's very astute that you would ask that question, because that's exactly the case. People who are thinking about their lot in life are evaluating why they are where they are, and they have leaned to their own understanding for 50 or 60 years and have found it to be a dead end, and they're looking for an alternate view of life, and they're finding it at the mission.
That is great. You know, my brother had a drinking problem, and he went to AA, and he kicked his alcohol abuse, and to this day he still goes there and he helps. I mean, all his friends are at AA meetings, and they're businessmen too.
Yeah,
it is, and
there's a Celebrate Recovery. There are two Celebrate Recoveries in town. One that meets at Mesilla Park Community Church, one at First Evangelical E-Free. And we also have an adjunct group that meets at the mission on Friday nights, led by a fellow from Jan Thomas, a fellow from Mesilla Park. And that program builds on the 12-step program, but weaves in more of the scriptural-based, biblical approach to curing addictions and of all sorts, not just alcohol and drugs, but pornography and other things.
Thanks for the call, Mike. All right, so we have got the question from Karen, who had asked, said she's involved with a youth group, and basically what could be done maybe once a month or whatever. What could these kids do to help down at the mission? What volunteer opportunities are available?
As I said at the top of the hour, through the end of May this year, we've had 15,000 hours of volunteers at the mission. And so it's a great question. Coming up in July, we start preparing for our back-to-school program. And first week in August, we have need of about 20 volunteers, 20 to 50 volunteers at our clothing room to help with the sizing and giving away of new shoes, new socks, and new underwear to between 700 and 800 kids throughout the county, many of whom come from big families who've probably never had a new pair of underwear or a new pair of socks. They've been wearing hand-me-downs their whole life. And so we have need of help at the in the kitchen all the time to serve meals, to help cook meals. If you can imagine what it takes to run a restaurant, a retail store, a food bank, a hotel, a restaurant. Did I say restaurant? Food bank. All of those jobs are there waiting for people who are willing to get involved. And I guarantee that people who do come to give their time will take away far more than they give.
Well, that's certainly encouraging to think about. Talking to Bob Jeska at Gospel Rescue Mission, we'll take a little break here. It is at 6:49. AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE. I'm Kelly O'Connell. 523-1450 to call in, and we will be right back to finish up with Bob.
If we want to do.
It is 6:52 and 61 degrees outside, high of 93, low of 59. You're listening to AM Las Cruces, 523-1450 to call in. All right, Bob, we never even really got to all of the nuts and bolts, so we'll have to do this again. But let me ask you this. Is Camp Hope the outdoor version of the Gospel Rescue Mission? Is it part of your setup?
No, it's not. The only thing that we have in common is that we help some of the same people. About of the people who stay at Camp Hope, they come across the street to eat about 70% of their meals. But that's the only affiliation.
So the government program has to get 70% of its meals from a privately funded organization. That's interesting. We have another phone call. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
This is Richard Barella.
Hey, Richard Barella. How you doing?
Fine. How are you?
Good, good. You're on the air.
Oh, thank you. I just wanted to call to encourage Las Cruces to support this man, Bob. I'm homeless. I stayed at that homeless shelter. Unfortunately, I have a bad back, and this is no reflection on Bob. Those cots that they have are just too soft for my back. I need to sleep on a board or on the floor. But Las Cruces, this man needs help. The people that he is serving, they need our help. If I didn't have anger issues, I would be in there running a Bob's Kitchen for him. I have a lot of cooking experience, but I'm a really hard boss, and like I said, I have anger issues. I'm homeless. I've got issues to deal with.
Let me ask you one thing, Richard. Let me ask you one thing. What do you think of the spiritual element down there?
The spiritual, I consider myself a man of God, and the spiritual reason is exactly why I'm calling in. I mean, like you guys were talking about, you can fill a belly, but it's awfully hard to fill the soul, especially with the opposition that we have out there.
Yeah.
Richard, when were you there?
Well, Bob, you know me. I'm Richard.
Oh, Richard, you're the painter.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, well,
I've got a lot of skills, Bob.
Huh?
But like I said, I've got a lot of issues as well. So
yeah, well, all of us do. It's just some of us are a little bit more inclined to admit it and seek help.
Right. Yeah, and I'm trying to get some help, and your organization is helping, which is why I'm calling.
Oh, thank you.
And you know, Las Cruces, if you're listening. This man needs our help.
Well, Richard, we're running out of time, but I do appreciate the phone call and the support, and I hope you have a great day. All right, Bob, we got about 3 minutes left. Let's hit the important parts of this. I want to just point out to people that the top server of the disenfranchised, the poor, and the widowed, and the orphaned is a private organization. And the government organization across the street has to use you guys to feed their people, which I find astonishing. We got another call. Thanks for the call to Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Hi, Kelly. It's Tom.
Hey, Tom. Thank you.
I had a call. Great call from Richard. And I love you. The more I hear you, the more I love you. Yeah, I'm always listening every day.
Thank you.
I want to thank you for having Bob on. I just want to make one quick question to Bob.
Yes, Tom.
Bob? Yeah. I bet you get a lot of vets.
Veterans.
We do. We do a snapshot survey every year, one day in October. And over the last 5 or 6 years, the percentage of vets in our facility ranges between 20 and 30%.
Yeah. And Rich made a good point. Yeah, when you deal with them, you have to get down and you know, down inside for what's causing it, you know, to be that way. You know what I'm saying, Bob?
Exactly. Yeah, you can't just give people money. You can't give them a place to stay.
No.
You just can't give them clothing because there is the person that is getting that help is a spiritual being and a moral being as well. And without addressing those components, you're really just making yourself feel good by helping them.
Right, Tom. Bob. Hey, Lord bless.
Thanks
and I hope
lot,
everybody
Tom.
Listening, you know, donates, do what they can. Yeah, donate your time. Donate
thank,
your
thank heart.
Thank
you, Tom. We got to go. I'm running out of time, but thank you.
Thank you, Tom.
Thanks for the call. And Tom is saying to donate, so we need to do that. We got about 1 minute left. What would you say to people listening in?
Well, I would say that in a very real sense, the Gospel Rescue Mission is the community's homeless shelter. We have been for 42 years.
It is paid for by private donation.
Yeah, all
it is,
private.
It is run by, you know, so, I mean, regardless of whatever you personally think of religion and charity together, it seems to me this organization is to a larger extent driven off of people's feeling like they owe a commitment to the poor because of God.
Yeah, well, exactly, and charity. Charity is a personal decision. It's not something that government should be involved in by coercing money from some people and giving it to others. It's a personal decision.
And you guys are located where?
We're at 1050 West Amador and 1416 South Solano. That's where our thrift shop and clothing room are.
And the number to call in?
It's 523-7727.
Thanks for coming in, Bob. It's great to see you.
Glad for you to have me aboard, Kelly. I enjoyed it.
Okay, folks, and just about out of time here, so thanks for listening into the first hour. We're going to be back after a break, and here's the incredible Bongo Band, Apache. We'll be right back, folks. 6:59 on the button.
Yeah,
it is 7:06 on the 28th of May. And I got Bob Endlich in here for the weather report, and it is 62 degrees right now, high of 93, low of 59, so it's going to be nice but pretty warm out there. I've got a few clips. We're going to talk about the flooding with Bob, but I've got a few clips here on the latest, and here is one. Residents along Texas rivers urged to leave amid flood threat. Death toll now at 21. Well, anyway, that is from recently from Fox News. Here is a little clip on a young lady who was washed out, was lost in the father's conversation with her. All right, so that's the status in Texas right now. You've got the flooding, and then you've got the aftermath, and sometimes the rivers rise afterwards. I've got Bob Endlich here, and we're going to come back and talk to him about the weather. So 7:15 right now, AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, Kelly O'Connell here, 523-1450. We will be right back. I've got Bob Endlich here. He is the weather guy. 62 degrees right now, speaking of which, high of 93, low of 59. And looks like it'll be sunny with some clouds. So, Bob, when you hear about this incredible series of storms that have seemed to have gone from Houston all the way up, straight up through Austin, hit San Antonio, hit Dallas-Fort Worth, and it's just epic amounts of rainfall. Isn't that global warming?
That is not human-caused global warming.
How can you say that?
Well, I'm very confident in what I say. We know now a lot more than we have known in the past, and we know that we have this feature called ENSO, the El Nino Southern Oscillation. And that feature, that change in the weather pattern, is caused by whether or not just off the Pacific coast, we have abnormally warm or abnormally cold water.
Isn't the water warming because of global warming?
The way that the water warms is from sunlight. So, yes, the water temperatures are increasing slowly. I think the last figure I saw was on the order of 1/40th. Of a degree per decade, so it's very, very small, but it is sunlight, not increased greenhouse gases that heats the water. And if you've ever like fished in the Gulf of Mexico, or if you've ever walked by a swimming pool and seen the bottom of the swimming pool, you know that visible light comes through the atmosphere essentially unchanged, and then it goes into the water maybe 100 feet. And so that's where the waters heat up. It's from visible light. It's not from carbon dioxide in the air. And a way that we could explain this is that the average cloud cover that the models talk about, just assume that average. But there are very good indications that the cloud cover over the globe changes in results in a response to cosmic rays. If there is more cosmic rays, if the sun's energy is weak, then cosmic rays come in and they seed clouds, and you get that stratocumulus cloud, that low marine cloud, and that low marine cloud will reflect sunlight and the globe will cool. And the opposite is true. If the sun is very strong, then there's fewer cosmic rays, and then the amount of cloud cover decreases, and the planet heats up. So that we don't need carbon dioxide to explain climate change.
All right. So you were talking about El Nino. What is? I've tried to explain it before, and what I came up with before, and so I had some clips on this that said, it seems to start down in South America, and the warm water moving up to North America, that influences the amount of precipitation in the atmosphere.
Well, it's not quite that way.
All right, go ahead.
In my military career, I spent 6 months on Guam, which is in the Western Pacific. That is the part of the world where the trade winds dominate. So if you can imagine, the Pacific Ocean is the largest ocean in the world. And when that sun that I was talking about heats up the tropical water, it is pushed into the Western Pacific, even further west than Guam, or by Indonesia. If something interrupts the trade winds, then that warm water comes all the way across from Indonesia, all the way across to South America, and then spreads to Central America and North America. And that abnormally warm water picks up more moisture, and it first of all, when you look at the satellite, the global temperature will increase because that warm water, instead of being in a pile, essentially, over by Indonesia, then spreads out over most of the Pacific Ocean, and being the largest ocean, so the global temperatures increase. There's a very distinctive signal to that. And as that warm water is off the coast of the Americas, then we get more water into the clouds and enhanced rainfall. There's a very distinctive pattern when we have El Nino. Typically, it starts from California and goes to Florida and the Carolinas when there's an El Nino year. But we have an interruption, and this El Nino misfired. But that pattern has brought the flooding rains to Texas.
Okay, so let me ask you this. We were just having these conversations about drought in California, drought here, Arizona, Texas. All of a sudden, it just seems to be totally broken wide open. This is all caused by El Nino?
Absolutely, it's caused by El Nino.
Now, could you just, for the common man and woman, can you say how the El Nino, this warm water, shows up here, and then what happens?
Well, there's more evaporation of the water into the air very close to the continent, and that, in combination with the normal jet stream pattern, makes the storms have more water content, and it's the water content that's the fuel for the rainstorms and the tornadoes and thunderstorms.
All right, so why didn't California and Arizona and New Mexico get a bunch of rain? Why did it just suddenly end up in Texas halfway across the country?
That's a very good question, and it has to do with the fact that this is not a perfect El Nino. It's what I called last time a misfired El Nino, because there's a warm pool, abnormally warm pool of water in the Gulf of Alaska. And that has made it so the normal situation, you remember, sometimes you'll see on the news that there's heavy rains in California and houses washing into the sea.
Yeah.
That's not happening right now. That happens when there's a classic El Nino.
Do you think it's going to happen? Is this going to address the drought in California, do you think?
I can't say exactly, but it looks like this El Nino is going to persist for a while, and if that blob of warm water moves from the Gulf of Alaska, then there's a good chance that we will return to a more normal precipitation. Now, you made a statement that's not quite right, Kelly, and that is New Mexico actually has been getting some help from this El Nino.
We have a little bit, but it's been, 10 days or so? I mean, but I'm looking over at Texas, and it's just pounded storm after storm after storm, and it's across the entire state. Now, the east of New Mexico has been hit a little bit, but
that's right.
It seems like you've got this giant state, and the entire state is covered with not just rain, but extreme weather, extreme thunderstorms.
And that's the way El Nino works. And it's spread even north into parts of Oklahoma. That's the way this is a very classic El Nino. And the National Weather Service has a climate prediction center, and they've got a map of the way the typical El Nino works. And people can just look this up and see. We have many, many years of records, and we know this. Now, you remember some of this area, like near Bastrop, Texas, in 2011, had those catastrophic wildfires.
Yeah.
Well, that was as a result of the brother of El Nino, which we call La Nina. When there's an El Nino, then about a year, year and a half later, we get what's called La Nina, and that's when the cold water then is up against.
So it all balances out, in your opinion?
Yes. If we have over 100 years of very good records of rainfall and temperature now, and there is a measure of drought called the Palmer Drought Severity Index. And so it's possible to look at the Palmer Drought Index over time. And it was a lot worse during the 1930s when we had
the Dust Bowl
years. Yes, indeed.
All right. So let me ask you this. We've been hearing about the drought, an extraordinary drought that Texas has been through the last few years, where every part of the state was pretty much in drought. Is the drought over? You get so much rain, doesn't it fill up all the lakes and the?
I think pretty much the drought is over.
Okay.
And that's the way Texas is, Texas and Oklahoma. It is, and this has been known back into the 1920s, that we have these periods of drought, and then we have these deluges. There's a gal who's at Texas Tech. Her name is Catherine Hayhoe. And she has said, well, you know, this is part of the permanent desertification of Texas. Well, sweetheart.
There goes that theory.
There goes that theory.
Hopefully she gets another idea before she retires. 729 AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE. I am Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450. Talking to Bob Endlich about these storms in Texas, the extraordinary storms that are going up into Oklahoma and even higher, and how they're related to El Nino and 729, we will be right back. Kelly here and talking to Bob Endlich. Just mentioning that a lot of these health exchanges, talking off the air, are bankrupt or in the process of becoming bankrupt. And then the healthcare exchanges, the state ones, are tied into these credits that you can use. And so but as the states give up their individual healthcare portals, and tie into the federal government, in theory, according to how the law was written, and it's very specific that they wanted the states to create their own health care system as a subset of Obamacare. As that happens, it could make insolvent the entire thing, because at some point it's quite possible that most of the United States health care will be directly from the federal government. And so and that's what's in the Supreme Court right now. Kind of interesting, but anyway. All right, so now we've agreed that all of our weather problems have been caused by global warming. Where do we go from there, Bob? Talking to Bob Endlich.
Well, let's just back up a little bit. You know, they were talking at the top of the hour, you played a clip about the floods going through Wimberley, Texas.
Yeah.
Wimberley, Texas is a small town.
Yeah.
Between Austin and San Antonio. But when I was still working at White Sands, I used to test software at Fort Hood, and my grandkids are down in San Antonio. So there was one weekend I took them up to Blanco Creek. Blanco Creek is a place where there are huge, almost coffee table size dinosaur footprints in the sandstone there. And Blanco Creek was just a trickle then. And the kids would sit in these footprints.
Would they bathe in them since they were the size of a...
Well, it was so dry there was no water.
There was no water to bathe in.
But,
all right,
but
so
the point is...
What's the point?
The point is that it is part of the way the weather is in Texas to go from these dry periods to these catastrophic wet periods. And the
But it's part of the pattern of global warming, clearly.
Clearly it's not, because some of the pronouncements that the president made at the Coast Guard Academy back on the 20th of May are just plain either not true or ill-informed. You know, he says that the temperatures are rising rapidly. Well, they're not. And as a matter of fact, we have not to the warmth that we had 1,000 years ago in the medieval warm period. And I mean, the medieval warm period, the Vikings became self-sufficient on in Greenland for several hundred years. They're far from self-sufficient right now. It takes a subsidy of around $13,000 per person per year paid by Denmark to feed the people in Greenland. So they're nowhere close to self-sufficient the way they were 1,000 years ago when Greenland was first settled by the Vikings.
Well, a lot of people are going to hear this and say you're a denier.
Well, I don't deny that the climate changes. Matter of fact, I proclaim the fact that we have these 1,000-year cycles. They're called Bond cycles. There are a number of different cycles.
Bond?
Bond. It's named for a fellow named Gerhard Bond, who is about my age, but he's now deceased. But he was at the Columbia Lamont Doherty.
Was he a government agent?
No, but he was a geologist, scientist, and he found what we call a persistent solar influence, sun's influence, on 1,000-year cycles, on looking at stuff that came out of icebergs. And when the icebergs melted, that stuff that was in the ice dropped out and went down to the ocean floor.
Well,
so
was
they
it?
Went out and they took these big pipes and drove them into the ground, pulled that sediment out and examined those sediments and said, well, golly, there's a 1,000-year cycle here. We call them Bond cycles now.
A Bond cycle is at this point has to do with the government and Wall Street. But here's a little clip from President Obama on this. And we've got a statement from his Coast Guard speech. I see heat clouds gathering, Dr. Bob.
Well, I think that is a lot of hot air on the part of our commander in chief.
That is rather ungenerous of you.
Well, you recall back in 2012, we had a hurricane that later became lessened. Hurricane status,
yeah,
was Storm Sandy.
Uh-huh.
Okay, that is the one storm that he attributed to climate change. But let me tell you, when I was 4 years old in New Jersey, I saw that Great Atlantic Hurricane of 1944.
Yes,
and it made quite an impact on.
Is that why you became a weatherologist?
It may be. It may very well be, because I remember the high winds. I remember the power lines down in the street and the blue sparks dancing in the rain, and the fact that we were without power for several days, and it made quite an impression on me. And I think the carbon dioxide at the time was like 304 parts per million, and that storm was paled in comparison to the what's called the Long Island Express, or the Great Atlantic Hurricane of 1938, and that was about 300 parts per million carbon dioxide, and that was a Category 3 and 4 storm that went across Long Island into Connecticut. It made a real mess.
Well, think of how bad those storms would be now if they were added to it global warming.
Well, in fact, we had such a storm, and it was Storm Sandy, And it was not even a hurricane when it came on the coast of New Jersey in Atlantic City. It was a large storm, and it caused a lot of damage.
All right, we're talking to Bob Endlich. He's got 1,000 anecdotes that seem to disprove global warming, but I'm not convinced, of course. We're going to take a little break here. Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE. 523 1450. We will be right back. We're here with Dr. Bob Endlich. He is the weatherologist, and we're talking about what it caused these storms in Texas. And the fact is, Bob, that this El Nino could go on for how long?
Well, sometimes it lasts as little as a year. Sometimes it'll last 3 years. And we have a bunch of models, and the models typically don't do very well in predicting this stuff. It's just... It is something that we don't have a really good handle on, except in a descriptive sense, based on the historical information we have.
They've worked well with predicting global warming. Why won't they work well with this one?
Actually, that statement is incorrect.
Why is that?
Because the models have predicted significant warming. You recall James Hansen in 1988 made this prediction in front of the Senate, and about all this global warming, and we have kept book on his claims, and we're actually a degree cooler than what he figured we would be. So we are below his lowest scenario. So the models and the IPCC models have failed spectacularly to forecast this fact that there's been no warming in the greenhouse now for 18 years and 5 months. So the models have absolutely failed. They're spectacularly failing, but you don't see that in the U.S. press, and you very rarely see mention of it in the TV news.
When did he make that statement in front of the Senate?
It was in 1988. And he said, well, this was the thing when Timothy Wirth was the senator from Colorado. And Wirth has said that the night before it was a humid, what they did was they called up the Weather Bureau and they found out what the historically warmest day of the year was. And that, so they scheduled a hearing for that day. And then the night before, they opened up all of the windows. So this humid air came into the hearing room. So, you know, with the Kleeglites and all this stuff, everyone was very uncomfortable. So it was a bit of stagecraft that was used. And that sort of manipulation still is ongoing, Kelly. I've got another story here that I'd like to mention briefly, and that goes back to the same day that the president made his talk at the Coast Guard Academy, which is the 20th. On this very radio station, you know, at the top of the hour, you go to CBS Radio News.
Yes.
And on that day at noontime, local here, the CBS broadcaster, Dan Revive, made a comment that with his lead story, which sort of went along the lines of this. Climate scientists know that global sea ice content is a measure of climate and climate change. And then he said, in a study just released today, there is a report that Antarctic sea ice cover is rapidly being lost, presumably from this human-caused CO2-fueled global warming. At that very day, I went and looked at the data. There's an outfit called the University of Illinois Champaign and Urbana. And they've got a website called Cryosphere Today. When I look at that site, the global amount of sea ice, that's Arctic sea ice and Antarctic sea ice, is above, and it's still above, the 30-year average.
Well, they had said that the sea ice was thinner than it used to be and that it's been eaten away from underneath by warm water.
What they say, but if you look at the data today, you'll find that that's not true, that the Arctic ice has been thickening, and the Antarctic ice is the largest since the satellite era began in 1979. And it was on that same day, on the 20th, when Dan Revive gave that CBS News story. So the point I'm trying to make is that there is a lot of, there's no way of saying it differently, propaganda being put out by the mainstream media, including the CBS Radio News that is on the station sometimes.
That's a shocking claim.
Well, I mean, I heard this, and I went to the data that very instant.
We'll take a little break here talking to Bob Endlich, who has an incredible number of stories and opinions on global warming, et cetera, talking about the flooding in Texas. And we will be right back at 7:49, and we're going to take a little break and then have the last dash to the end of the hour. Kelly here, and we got Bob Endlich, but we got Keith. Keith, I got to say thank you.
Oh, yeah, anytime, Kelly.
I pulled in a marker, but Keith and I are friends. We don't hang out a lot, but, I mean, we spent a lot of time around each other with when he was on
yeah.
the air, and I called in a marker, and he said, why not? I told him I had to go to a wedding.
Yeah. Is it a gay wedding?
Believe it or not, it's not a gay wedding. Should I put one of those on my schedule?
No, Kelly, you know, you came through for me when, you know, I was going through that rough time with my son.
Yeah.
So, yeah, anytime you need me to call in. It's just that, you know where I lean. So
yeah.
your listeners may either collectively tune out or light up the board. You
lean
never know.
Forward. Lean forward and light up the board for Keith. Keith is a great guy.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about it. And not just because he's covering the ship, but you heard him. I've got it on record. Any time. That means any time.
Oh, yeah. Your listeners will really love that.
Yeah, I'm sure they will. All right. Bob Endlich, we're trying to convert him here on global warming, Keith, and he's just not cooperating.
Well, I think Bob taught me this when he, you know, when I interviewed him a couple of times. It's not global warming. It's climate change.
Well, the climate changes all the time, and part of what is attributed to humans is just the fact that we have these extremes. And this example in Texas from 2011, the bastard fires and drought, to this year with all of that rainfall, it's the change from El Nino to La Nina. So things depart rapidly from the average because we have this ENSO or El Nino Southern Oscillation, and that's what causes that. But with over 100 years of records, there's been no increase in the extreme events. I think a political person said, well, these are record-setting rains in Texas. Well, actually, I looked up some of those records, and they're nowhere close to the records that we have in Texas.
I may have been the person that said that in my complete and utter ignorance.
Well, I mean, I testified before that the city council and the mayor here, Ken Miyagashima, tried to guesstimate from when he grew up as a kid whether it was warmer or cooler. That's his mindset, perhaps Keith's mindset, perhaps your mindset.
He may have had you're saying he may have gone through a few fevers when he was a child.
Well, I mean, he was just saying, well, I remember when I was a kid. Well, the way that you determine this is you look at the weather records. We have standards for making these measurements, and we have standards for writing them down. And those data are in the Western Regional Climate Center in Nevada. And you can go download them and put them in a spreadsheet and see for yourself. But it's not determined by the mayor or the governor or whoever.
I hope you're not denigrating Mayor Ken's memories.
What I'm saying is I'm a scientist, and way back long ago, we learned the scientific method. And one of the things we like to do is write things down and keep records from year to year to year, and we can go back and check them.
All right. So do you see – now, I already asked you this, but I'm very curious – the El Nino could go on. How long can an El Nino go on? Is it just a summer, spring, summer thing, or is it a year-long thing?
It can be up to 3 years long.
3 years of El Nino.
Of El Nino. And then what immediately happens is since that warm water pool that came across the Pacific has dissipated, then we almost immediately go into La Nina. So we will go from a wet cycle immediately to a dry cycle here. And that dry cycle with La Nina brings dry conditions from Arizona all the way to Florida.
But you're saying that global warming could cause the El Nino to stick around even longer.
No, I'm not saying that at all. That we know from history that sometimes normally they last about a year, but sometimes they've lasted up to 3 years. And after their peak, we go to La Nina about a year later. And please mark my words, this El Nino will be followed by a La Nina, and that La Nina is going to follow the dry pattern that we saw.
I'm
going to
play this back for you when the temperature keeps creeping up.
The temperatures have shown no increase in the greenhouse for the last 18 years and 6 months.
Keith, don't you find his ignoring the science to be disturbing?
Well, all due respect, I compared to what he says to other science, if ever all these scientists have signed on to the climate change or global warming, I think they look
global
at the climate
warming.
Change, then this goes counter to them. I'm not a scientist, and I'm not even going to try to educate myself to the level to be a weather scientist. I'm just going to have to defer to the experts. And if 98% of the experts say this, I'm going to go with them.
Well, Mr. Obama has done a very good job of talking that number around. The most reliable study I know was done by the American Meteorological Society, and it's around 50-50 about whether humans have a significant effect. So this idea of a 97% consensus is bunk. It's based on a bad study.
Would you call it poppycock or just bunk?
I would say both.
All right. Thanks for coming in, Bob Endlich. Really appreciate your weather opinions.
Please, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Absolutely, and let's try to straighten our attitude out about global warming between now and the next meeting. Thanks for coming on. Hey, thanks so much, Keith, for coming on the show tomorrow and helping out. And you're a stand-up guy?
You know, anytime, Kelly, really. I mean that.
I do know I've talked to a lot of people that miss you, and I know that they're going to look forward to hearing you tomorrow.
Well, tomorrow I am going to bring my compatriot, Mel Ohanek's going to help me. If I've forgotten anything about this board, he will have remembered it. So,
my goodness, what a mind. All right, take you out of here. Incredible Bongo Band, the most influential song in the history of hip-hop. We'll talk to you later. Have a great day. I'll see you back on Monday. Ciao.